Hello.
I can hear you now.
Hey!
I'm sorry.
What happened?
After all that, I think it was a connection thing. I think one of the stupid plugs wasn't in all the way.
Ugh.
So, I'm sorry. I wasted like a half an hour of our time, and I apologize.
Well, I mean, these things happen to us. They seem to happen to us more than anybody else in the world.
The important phrase in that sentence is they happen to us.
Hey, really?
Like it's... We need to kill a chicken and sprinkle it over this podcast.
White Rocket Entertainment.
I'm Brendan Marcello, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in turned hair! A miracle in turned hair!
And according to my sources, it's an almost credible sports discussion.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight!
On the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 344.
A miracle in turned hair! A miracle in turned hair!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I have no idea if I got the intro right just now because I was doing that completely off the cuff because we've been having technical issues, but by golly, we're going to push forward and get this thing done tonight and get it out there to our many, many listeners and to our patrons that support us. And so here we are. And we've had like a half an hour of technical problems, but we got them overcome now, so we're going to get right on into it. The first thing, though, I have to know is, can you hear it when I push this button?
Smoke weed every day.
No.
Wow. So we still don't have the soundboard working for both of us. Wow. Or could you, and you're fooling me?
I know, I can't hear it. It's kind of a blessing. We get charged extra for this version.
We almost had another technical problem when I spat my LaCroix orange all over the computer just then when you said that. But all right, let's get going here. You have put us together a fine brief agenda for tonight's off-season show. We are recording this, by the way, Wednesday night, June 13th, the day that we have just learned the United States and the rest of North America will be hosting the 2026 World Cup, which is a long time from now, but we're also having the World Cup for 2018 starting tomorrow. Are you interested in that at all? Are you going to be watching it, or are you not interested? Since the U.S.
I'm interested. I mean, I enjoyed the World Cup last time, even the matches, mainly the U.S. matches, but even the other matches I watched, and I'm definitely going to watch. I'm going to pick some teams that I decided to cheer for and follow them. So it's fine. I'm in.
There's never been one that so many teams that I cheer for are all gone. I mean, I'm a fan of the USA, of course, and my 1A team is Italy, and then Argentina and Scotland and Ireland, and out of all of them, Argentina's the only one in, and even the Netherlands is not in. So, I mean, you know, I was saying earlier today that we need like an NIT of teams that didn't make it into the World Cup, because you've got basically an all-star NIT field of teams that didn't make it in. But
yeah, anyway. It's a different podcast.
It is. Well, and that's why I mentioned it, is because we've talked about doing some World Cup coverage, but without the U.S. in it, a lot of that steam goes out. So we'll see what we do. There might be a show or two as the World Cup goes along, depending on how the storylines go. The question you ask about Auburn football, first and foremost on our agenda tonight, is how do you feel at this point in the off season? So why don't you answer that then? How do you feel at this point in the off season?
I still feel really good and optimistic. I mean, we've had a couple of injuries, wide receiver and that kind of stuff. We've been through spring practice. We're preparing for fall practice. Looking at the schedule, it may be at this point in my mind, it seems tougher than it did looking at it a year or two ago. But I feel very confident because for the first time forever, we have a returning – for the first time since 2014, we have a returning quarterback that I feel good about. Then yes. That's gigantic.
Yeah.
So, and the difference between this year and that year is we can actually play defense now.
Well. Uh-oh, we got an echo. Yeah, it's weird because it seems like, well, we're going to talk about the Washington game a bit later in the show, and I got a couple of things to say about that, but yeah, overall, it seems like our schedule just gets harder and harder every time I bring it up and look at it and kind of go gulp, you know. And let me ask you this. How soon do you think, how far into the season will it be before we even kind of get a sense of who our bell cow, you know, as they say, running back is? Because that may go a long way.
Yeah, but this is the Gus Malzahn school of I'll play two or three guys early and then I'll figure it out as we go along, right?
And then one of them will get 1,000 yards, yeah.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, we have no idea who that's going to be now. But it's 100% going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it seems like every season something is nagging at us, and this year it's, what about those injuries to the receivers? What about the situation at running back? And what about the offensive line? It's a weird, this is how it tends to go with Auburn, right? For years we have a solid offensive line, solid running backs, and receivers, and we just want our quarterback situation nailed down. So we get the quarterback situation nailed down, and everything else is up in the air. We can't have everything at once, you know? They're always at all. Or you know, when our offense was really good and we were giving up 55 points to Alabama, so we get the defense shored up, and then the offense falls apart. So we just can't have nice things all at the same time. We can have a nice thing here and a nice thing there, but we just can't seem to put it all together all the time. It's why we're a perennial, you know, top 10 team, but have a hard time getting in the playoffs or whatever else, you know, winning the whole conference, it seems like. So,
but if I told you, if I came to you and said in a given year, Auburn is going to have one of the top 10 defenses of the country, and we're going to have a very talented quarterback who's a Heisman Trophy candidate, how would you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You feel pretty good.
I feel pretty good. It's just that, as we've said many times, we are in the unfortunate situation at Auburn of being across the state from the program that might as well be an NFL program. And so we are, rightly or wrongly, we are judged not against the other 119 programs in Division I. We're judged against the number one program in Division I. And so, you know, it's that perpetual thing of, Auburn only beats Alabama, you know, 3 times out of 10, which is more than anybody else does. So Auburn sucks. You know what I mean? It's
yes.
The bar is higher for us than any other program in the country to prove our mettle, and it frustrates me and annoys me no end. But I guess it also makes us better. It makes us have to keep trying harder, you know, than anybody else. So, well,
that's true.
In other introductory news, we will be doing our road show this fall, because our there was a little fluctuation there during the off season, and I expected that would happen, but our Patreon is currently it's just on the positive side of where it needs to be, and so as long as we don't lose anybody, and as long as we only gain more people. And give me a little more confidence and security, then we're in good shape to do it. And we are trying to decide which game. And it looks right now like we kind of have narrowed it down to two. We have family, you know, considerations and other things going on. And John and I both have, you know, kids in college and younger kids and wives and all that kind of good stuff. So we both have to juggle a lot of stuff. But right now, I think it's fair to say that we more or less have it narrowed down to we'll either be doing the show from Texas A&M game at Auburn or the Arkansas game at Auburn. Does that sound about right?
I think that's fair.
Yeah. We're holding Southern Miss back in reserve, but, you know, it has issues of its own. So, you know, I was hoping to do a later game, but we may end up Arkansas be our default because A&M may just be too complicated. But we're going to try to make it work, and we'll report back on our next episode as to how far things are getting solidified. But right now, we've kind of at least got it narrowed down to those two, it looks like, A&M or Arkansas. And we also, I want to thank, you know, Auburn Elvis. He's really been trying to help us a lot and giving us ideas and trying to help with the logistics, and I appreciate that from him. So, what about in the news? What about basketball?
Well, we had a podcast, you know, a while ago where we were like, oh my gosh, everybody's leaving.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we were worried about that. Well, and now almost everybody came back. Mustafa Heron transferred. But basically, everybody else is back, along with Samir Doty, who transferred from BCU. You know, the returning players, and today we signed a JUCO point guard to back up Harper.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're going to have a very, very talented team with a lot of depth, you know, a good 8 or 9 man rotation. You know, Purifoy is back. He's still got to sit out a few games at the beginning of the season, but that's fine. He'll be back for conference play. And, you know, we got Bryce Brown, we got Purifoy, we got Harper, we got the big guy back. Plus, we got, you know, Horace Spencer back. We got the freshman back, Okiki. Mm. So it's going to be a really, really talented team. Auburn is going to be picked to, you know, to be a top 15 team next year for sure. And it'll be one of the favorites to win the SEC. And I think we have a real chance to win the SEC again.
That's amazing. Now, Mustafa Heron transferred to St. John's. Wasn't there another player that transferred, one of our bigger guys? I can't remember who that was.
Backup point guard transferred. Mitchell.
Well, yeah, Damian Mitchell. But there was another guy then, like one of our forwards or whatever.
Yes, big guy, short, heavy-set guy.
Heavy-set guy, right. I can't think of
that. That came from Davidson.
Yeah.
I'll think of his name in a second. He transferred.
So we lost.
I think because he saw the roster and said, you know, I'm not going to get the ball.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We lost maybe three players, but they are not the three I would have predicted by any means 6 months ago.
No.
They're three completely different players than what I would have ever predicted. So that's good. I'll take the trade, basically.
It is. I mean, then, you know, having Austin Wiley back for full season will be exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Having an actual presence in the middle, in the center there. I mean, that's something we haven't had in a while.
We were worried that we were going to have kind of a bare cupboard situation, and now we got everybody back, and it's going to be a really, really, really fun team.
It is. Man, I'm really shocked. I still can't believe it. So the baseball team did really, really well, and they ended up having to play the number one team in the country, Florida, in Florida, in Gainesville. And on Monday night, they actually took it to a third game in the Super Regional, and they actually took it to extra innings. So, I mean, they took it just about as far as you could possibly take it without winning. Now, I was frustrated at the time, and I was saying, why does it always have to go like this? Because it seems like, you know, the story of Auburn is the Noble coming up just short. You know, it seems like everything we do, except maybe swimming and equestrian, everything we do in our big sports is like the Noble overachievers who come just up to the bar and then don't quite do it. And it gets frustrating after a while. You know, it happened twice with the women's softball. It happened with the baseball team trying to get to Omaha. I think about those three women's basketball teams in a row that made it to the national championship game and all lost. I think about the Rose Bowl with Nick Marshall's team in 13. It just seems like, you know, I always said that's why 2010 was so mind-bogglingly special, you know, because if Auburn history had played out in 2010, then at best we would have lost on a fluke play on the last play of the game to Oregon, and at worst Cam would have been declared ineligible and we'd have forfeited half the season. So to actually have everything actually work out and us to win is just it's what makes 2010 just, you know, even 2004 when everything worked out, we still got screwed. So and that's the subject of something that we're working on that we'll be unveiling in the weeks to come, although the patrons may know something about it already. So I mean, what do you think about that as far as the baseball team goes? Is that am I wrong to be kind of fatalistic about it, or is that, I mean...
No, I think we went through a period where the baseball team was down a little bit, but I think the new coach they've hired has done a great job. We had a really good team this year. We had a guy that ended up being the number one pick in the draft, Casey Mize, was the number one pick in the amateur baseball draft a couple weeks ago. And, I think the trajectory of the baseball team is a good one, and they fell just short, but I think they had a really tough draw and they played their guts out, and we're all everybody's proud of them. And I think down the road they're going to, get past this, or we'll get to host a super region, or it'll be a different situation. So,
but that was still fun to watch. For months, Alan Green, our new athletic director, was saying that he was still kind of in listening mode, absorbing, taking in information, and thinking before he started, pulling the trigger on making any drastic moves. He wanted to kind of get a sense of what everybody thought and what was going on and what he needed to do. Well, he seemed to come to some conclusions the other day, because he let quite like half a dozen employees, upper level employees from the athletics department, go. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Only that, I never want anybody to lose their job. But I do think that he stepped back, took a serious look at the athletic department, both at what happened with the softball situation, but also kind of the operation of the athletic department overall. And he wanted different people in those jobs. And I think, I believe that the Auburn athletic department as a whole can be better than it has been. I mean, there's more the athletics department than picking the football coach. And I think they can operate at a higher level and do more for the fans and the university than they have done. And I think, that Alan Green has the ability to implement that. I'll be interested to see what they do.
Yep, me too. Well, I think it's cool to have him there. And meanwhile, Jay Jacobs is at Florida. I never saw that coming.
And my only comment about that, and I tweeted about this, is there are some Auburn fans who thought he was so incredibly incompetent that he was literally like a Mr. Magoo character or something, that no other university would ever hire him, because he was clearly, completely worthless. And, pretty soon after he retired, Florida hired him. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. In some NCAA rules changes, we have some sort of solidifying the redshirt rules, and there's some transfer rules changes that I think everybody really saw coming. That was pretty much destined to happen, and also the kickoff rule. So talk a little bit about the changes, the NCAA rule changes in the offseason.
I mean, the player roster rules are huge, actually. I think the rule now is that red shirts can play at any four games, including the bowl game, and not lose their eligibility. And that starts immediately. So that means this fall, if we have a game, a late season game, I don't know who the game is between Georgia and Alabama, and we have a bunch of red shirts that we want to play to rest injured starters, we can do that. If we have banged up running backs or whoever else, if we redshirt the quarterback we just signed, but we want to play him in that game, we can do that. So I think it's really nice. It's nice for the players, that they can get in some game action but keep the red shirt. It's nice for teams to have a little extra depth for this kind of stuff. And those guys can go play in the bowl game and not burn their whole year. And I think that's a good thing. And it gives coaches the ability to play them in some situations and evaluate them a little bit. And also, if you play a guy early and he's really overwhelmed, you could say, hey, let's step back. Or if you have a critical injury situation, you can play a guy for a game or two and see if he can handle it before you burn the red shirt completely. Like otherwise, in the past, it was one play in the middle of the season, the red shirt was burned. So I think it's a really smart thing. And then the other one is that players can start – this rule doesn't start until October, but players can transfer to any school they want to, and the universities cannot block them. There's no conference blocks or anything else. So it's just – and this is grad students or regular transfers. They can go wherever they want to go.
Yeah, well, and like I said, we saw that coming because it was just getting to where it just seemed ridiculous that a coach could stop somebody who's graduated from college could stop them from going to a different school. And I think that, you know, it was pretty much the writing was on the wall as far as that goes. But think about this. I just did some quick math. With that red shirt rule, you will not believe what I think is the number it's possible for a player, number of games a player could play now.
So, 48, 52, and then, you know, you're adding in bowl games.
Yeah, I'm saying how many
SEC championship
games? I'm saying how many football games could a player conceivably play in? Of course, it's unlikely, but it's possible. Well, think about it. You got a 12-game season. You've got
68.
I have 64. Am I missing? We only have a two-tier playoff right now. So,
there's 12 regular season games, SEC title game.
That's 52. And then
you know what? I added a bowl game and the playoff. It's one of the others.
Yeah,
so.
There you go. Yeah, so 64. That's a lot of football games, considering that. Not long ago, it would have been 48, you know, 12, 11, 11 regular season in a bowl game, and then, you know, times is be 48, 52. So that's 12 more games than you could have played a few years ago. It's pretty amazing. What did you go over the kickoff rule? I just tuned out there, or what's the new kickoff rule?
No, I mean, I think this happened a while ago. They had the rule was that if you kick it, and they catch it inside the 25-yard line, it's a touchback.
Oh, okay. So, in other words, not in the end zone. They extended the end zone all the way out to, like, the 20 or something, or the 25.
Yeah. Which is
like kind
of defeats
catch.
The purpose of having a great kickoff guy, to me.
Yeah.
Because there was real value in having a guy who could kick it in the end zone. Now you don't have to kick it in the end zone. You just got to – and I get it. It's a player safety thing. The kickoffs are most dangerous plays in football.
Yeah.
To me, you lose a little something on the kick, you know, with strong-legged kickers. But I get it. If it's preventing player injury, that's fine. I think it's going to be boring, though. I think it's going to happen 99% of the time. It's going to be a touchback. I mean, that was already happening a little bit, but –
All right. Well, how soon is it until coaches start coming up with, like, kickers teaching them to squib kick and onside kick and all that? I mean, they already kind of took the onside kick away, made it harder, which sucks because that was awesome. But I think
you're right. I think there may be teams who do that, and there may be teams who, you know, when a guy does – if you have a really great kick returner, it may be a bigger advantage because teams will not cover kickoffs as much. So they'll be won't have as much practice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. It's somebody's going to game the system and figure out a way to make that work for them. That's going to be very interesting to see.
I mean, I just think you could have games where a team goes three or four games in a row without covering a kickoff, and then they play you, and you have a great kick returner, and they're not ready. They're assuming it's going to be a fair catch again. And the guy's bringing it right at him, going 100 miles an hour, so...
Yeah,
I was going to say, guess which team signed, you know, the two fastest players and coming into college football this year.
And have a good kicker, too, so we could really make that to our advantage all the way around. That would be nice. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. It's interesting. Let's see. You mentioned some early off-season predictions about things like Heisman Trophy and all. So where do you see
The subject of this came from the fact that it's that glorious time of year when magazines appear on bookstore shelves.
Yes,
again.
I tweeted you a picture that I was in Barnes & Noble and saw the magazines. I was like, whoa, I honestly didn't realize it was already time for that. I thought that was a little early, but I picked
it
up.
It is earlier this year. They're ahead of where they have been in the past.
Yeah, I picked up the fantastic Notre Dame cover because that's the only cover we get here is Notre Dame because nobody gives a crap about Illinois. And Missouri is not going to sell, you know, here. So we get Notre Dame, not even in the same state. We get Notre Dame, yay. But we know that Stidham last year came within just a couple hundred yards of setting the all-time, you know, of catching Damian Craig's all-time passing record. He was, I think he threw for more yards than Cam did in 2010, right? by just a little bit.
I believe so.
I think he's second, yeah. Single season, so, I think he's second.
Yeah, so do you think he will break the passing records this year?
I think he could. I think combining the fact that that there will be more emphasis on the passing game and he's had more experience and the running game is still kind of a question mark compared to last year, for example, I think the potential is there. Now, the schedule, you know, we don't have to go to Clemson, but we still have to play freaking Washington, so it really kind of balances out there. And then we have to go to Georgia and to Alabama. So, but he's not going to be playing the whole season hurt, hopefully, like he did last year. So, I can see ways that he'll have better numbers this year, and I can see ways that he could maybe not have as good numbers this year.
I think he's going to have better numbers this year because I think, number one, just experience. I mean, I think he had – and in a couple of games that were real duds last year, and I think his experience combined with, you know, the experience – we have experience – we have some injuries at receiver, but I think we have some talented receivers who are definitely going to be available when we get a play. I mean, Slayton, Ryan Davis, Nate Craig Myers are there, and we're going to play them. And I think, you know, you put them out there with an experienced quarterback who's had a lot of practice time thrown to them – And the coaches are more comfortable with what Stidham can and can't do and what he's comfortable doing. And I think the passing game is going to be better. I mean, I really do. I think it's going to be – he's going to be more comfortable. They're going to be more comfortable with him. And I think it's going to be tougher to stop. And I think, you know, I think he's going to have a really, really big year. I do.
I know they call him a dual-threat quarterback. I could just as soon never see him go off running again. I mean, I know it's really cool when he tucks it and runs in for a touchdown, as he did a couple of times. That's cool, but I could just as soon not have him do that and come up with a, you know, another busted-up shoulder, really.
He took a beating
yeah.
against Georgia and Alabama in those three games.
Yeah, he did. But he was
an absolute beating.
But he got his shoulder hurt against Missouri, of all teams.
No, I know, and I think that limited him, especially in the middle part of the season. But I think go back and watch the Alabama game in particular. He carried the ball in some tough runs. He got first downs and stuff for us.
Yeah.
Running the ball, but he took a beating.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be in the Heisman talk, but it would be cool. It would certainly be cool. Yeah, the Washington game. I just wanted to say. Memo to every program out there that aspires to be a top five program, schedule Auburn, and it is guaranteed that by the time you actually get to play us, you will be a top five team because it always happens. You know, if you're a team that's kind of normally a big program, but you're kind of wallowing in mediocrity, just put us on the schedule for 5 years down the road, and in 5 years, you'll be a top five program. We should market that, right?
So this is good news for Oregon, Cal, and Penn State.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, and good news for Washington that they scheduled us because, you know, here they are about to play us. And, hey, look at that. They're a top five program. I mean, I know they've been fairly good the last couple of years. Peterson's a good coach. But apparently all you have to do, it worked with USC. it worked with Clemson. It's working with Washington. I mean, one after another, you know. So – even Washington State was much better in 2013 than they had been like the previous 20 years before we played them.
It's true. They were terrible before that.
Yeah, absolutely. Kansas State was no pushover the year we played them. Mm-hmm. So Washington, I'm still wrestling about if I'm even going to go to that game. I'm going to be in Atlanta, of course. It's Labor Day weekend. And part of me screams, well, of course you're going to go. But I'm just not entirely sure I want to give up a big chunk of my most important day at DragonCon, where I make a lot of money and do a lot of important things for my, you know, business and my career, to go and sit there in that game. So you tell me. I mean, what do you think about that game right now?
I mean, I think it's good. Number one, it's the best game of the opening weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of other good games, so this is the marquee matchup. So, you know, it's a 3:30 game on ABC, and I think it's going to be a lot of people are going to watch. I think it's going to get a lot of attention. Washington returns their starting quarterback. the guy that was, you know, that was played in the playoff against Alabama a couple years ago. They have, you know, good returning running back. They have, you know, pretty solid defense, a lot of speed on defense. So I think the defense is going to be like playing, you know, a good SEC defense, maybe without some of the size, but a really, really talented defense. But I would say, I mean, when I say the size thing, I know they lost their best defensive tackle, who was like 350 pounds. But Washington fans don't love some Washington fans don't love the quarterback because they think he's not good when there's a pressure on him. So I think Auburn's defensive line, their offensive line is good but not great. I think we can get pressure on him and mess him up, and that'll be the difference in the game. That's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Well, I like it. I approve that plan. Is Washington going to be in that game a tougher opponent than Central Florida was?
No. Only in the sense that it was the end of the season and Central Florida was peaking. You know, they were firing on all cylinders, and with you know, coach players scheme, they were all motivated and all that. And Auburn was, you know, a little banged up in that game.
Yeah.
And lacked a little bit of the motivation, I would say. So, you know, not as tough in that sense as Central Florida. Mm. And the Central Florida kid, the quarterback, is a great player. So,
yeah. What about the SEC East? You have a note here about them, and I feel like now that they are in, now that like almost the entire SEC East is head coached by former SEC West assistants, or in the case of Florida, an SEC West head coach, they're stepping up their game a little bit. Finally, about dang time.
I think people forget about this, that the. Yeah, Georgia won the East, and they had a good year last year, and they went to the playoff, and they had a really good season, and they won the SEC. But the SEC East the last 3 years has been abysmal. Mm-hmm. I mean, just terrible. And it's finally going to be decent, trending towards good. You know, I think Florida's going to be better. I think South Carolina is already – we know they're already good. And probably the second best team after Georgia. Mm-hmm. I think Tennessee is going to be better because there's nowhere they could go but up after the dump. You know the dumpster fire they've been the last year. Missouri has a really good returning quarterback. They've lost their offensive coordinator, but they still the quarterback's really good, and they got some good players. I think they're going to beat some teams that people don't think they'll beat. And Kentucky is solid. Vanderbilt is not terrible. They were not bad down the stretch last year. So I think the biggest thing is that like Florida, Tennessee are going to turn around and not be pushovers. And I think everybody's just assuming that Georgia's going to run roughshod over the East for the next 5 years. And I think that's really wrong. I think it's going to be much tougher. Georgia's going to have a much tougher road to make through than they have in the last couple of years.
I can't tell you how much I'm rooting for South Carolina when they play Georgia early in the year, because that's always a game that's a little unpredictable.
Oh, yeah. Amen to that.
I think that Pruitt will I don't know. I mean, it's just a sense that I get. But from everything I've seen him do at Florida State, at Alabama, where was he between there? At Georgia or yeah?
Georgia.
Yeah, he's always impressed me. I don't like him, but he's impressed me in terms of being very solid and hard nosed, you know. And so I can kind of see him making Tennessee at least tougher and more resilient than the fragile little thing that they've been the last couple of years. So where they've basically been a glorified American Athletic Conference team, really, is what they've met with better players, is what they've amounted to. Let me pause for a second and thank our patrons, because we're on the air because of you guys, and we're going to do our road show this fall because of you guys. We have numerous expenses, and of course we'll have the expenses of travel and setting all the stuff up for that game, and just our regular expenses on the program in terms of hosting and all the various other things that we have to pay. And you guys keep us going. And you too out there can join our little group of patrons supporting the White Rocket shows you like, including the AU Wishbone, for as little as a dollar a month. And you get to also not only have the satisfaction of knowing you're keeping this show going and having me read your name every episode, but also we do various things like we had a NCAA bracket, and we have various other activities that patrons get to do during the year. You also get to go to our Patreon page, and we do previews of various things. In fact, I just put a video up a couple of days ago where I lay out a few very, very vague preview ideas of what John and I are going to be doing over the next year for this big new dual project we have going on. No specifics yet, but you can get a sense of kind of where we're going with it. And so you get a lot of benefit for this. And here are the people we have to thank. And you can join this group for just as little as a dollar a month. We've got Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, and Samuel Salvatore. We appreciate you guys so much. And then Stephen Thompson, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Justin Bean, Chris Usher, and Neil Dyer. And then we have David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Will Summerford, John McCune, Catherine England, Ann Kanjian, Auburn Tiger Talk, and Clay Henson. He's moving up in the rankings. We appreciate that, Clay. David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vigicana, Matt Rubenheimer, and Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, George Gaston, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen. And then finally, J.W. Rice, Ward M. Wade, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Brant Rumble, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, and our one-time anonymous donors. To join up, you can just go to patreon.com and just search for my name or White Rocket. Or you can just go to www.plexico.net. We have links to our shows, to everything you could possibly want to find, the Patreon page. Everything is there at www.plexico.net. And also got to mention, we have right now going a Fantasy Formula One League. And there are four of us in it right now, and Mira is dominating it. She's led from the start. So my 10-year-old daughter is dominating our Formula One League over three grown men. But that's how fantasy sports go, as you well know, right, John?
That's it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it happens that way.
That's right. So let's see. One other quick update. Several of our patrons out there supported our Cold Lightning comic book that we've been putting together. Jared's doing the inks on it, the art director on it. We have a Brazilian artist named Wendell Cavalcani who's been doing the pencils, and we have a whole team put together to do it. It is done. And it is at the printers now. So as soon as it comes back from them, I'll be mailing it out to all you folks that supported it. And then we'll be going on from there. So thanks a bunch for that, too. John won't be able to hear this, but I'll hit this button.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast. All right.
There was Amir introducing you, John. So what we got for listener questions?
All right, first question comes from John Dahl, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com and said, I was listening, looking back and listening to some old podcasts y'all did from 2015 to now.
Oh, boy.
Just to appreciate the year we've had, as well as see what we did to address the issues since then. The major problem was Gus had to trust Jeremy Johnson as the future of the team success and at the quarterback position, and that was the main setback to our success. Mm. Take that part away. He's been pretty good, pretty great as a head coach. During the ass kicking of Jordan Hare episode, Van mentioned that if most coaches get one championship in 5 years, there would be a statue made in their honor. So my question is Gus equally close to getting run out of Auburn as he is to getting a boom statue? What are the odds that if he does take it to a national title eventually, that he gets a statue? From a fan's perspective, that will be the most divided, hated, controversial statue of winning coach. Thanks for the great podcast, and sorry about the lengthy question, John Null.
Well, thanks for that. You know, it's true because two out of the last five SEC championships were won by – well, no. We won the West. I get a little excited there. But, yeah, he's won the West twice in 5 years and the whole thing once. in 5 years, which is something that Tommy Tuberville won the whole thing once in his 10 years. So, and Terry Bowden never did. So, yeah, I mean,
undefeated 93.
Yeah. Dang it. Don't even get started on that.
Keep going.
So, lights just changed. So, yeah, I know it would be very divisive, wouldn't it? I can't, Gus is just, and I think it's also Gus's unluckiness to be coach at a time when everybody's on social media criticizing and talking about everything in every walk of life, you know. Pat Dye never had to put up with Twitter. Not when he was coach.
It's a good question. I mean, Gus is going to have to do a lot to, you know, right now we have one SEC title. One SEC West title, but he's got to win the conference. He's got to, you know, win a national title to even have this kind of discussion. So,
yeah,
and I think he can do it. I think he can get there. So,
I do too.
But it'll be interesting. You're right. It'll certainly be a divided discussion. Mm. All right. Next question is from Rusty Owens.
Yeah, hey, Rusty.
And he says this is idea for a slow season discussion. And he was talking about. His question is about how Auburn is one of only four schools that made a New Year's Day bowl, the NCAA tournament, and the baseball super regional, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So he said, what if Alan Green called us as part of his listening tour and asked us to give him ideas about how to make Auburn's brand known as one of the preeminent brands in college sports across the country and across the board? What would you do? What would you suggest? And he says his ideas include how to figuring out how to more effectively use Auburn alums as brand ambassadors and get Auburn athletes to work from the major sports back on campus more. It seems to be happening in football. Occasionally happens with Barkley, but we need to expand it more to other things.
Mm. That's good.
So it's a good question. And he says, I feel like Auburn has a window of opportunity, you know, to make these things happen. And especially with, you know, down the road, Saban retiring and that kind of stuff. The point is, can Auburn take it to another level? And it kind of goes to what I was saying earlier with the athletic department. What would you do if Alan Green called you and said, what's something that Auburn should change? And I'm going to throw in a wrinkle into his question and say, is one of those changes alternate football uniforms?
Ha ha! Well, I want to address that. I do. But I'll say that I think that I keep advocating that we've got to have the Heisman House ad with our three Heisman winners. I've said over and over that the perfect ad, I've said this in print, I don't know if I've said it on here, so I'll say it on here. It's got like 40,000 views on Twitter now, is that what you do is you have Mark Ingram in the bathroom in the Heisman House, and he's like, hey, who used up all the toilet paper? And then you show Bo and Pat and Cam all sitting around the patio out back sipping drinks, and there's toilet paper all hanging from the trees. That to me is the perfect Auburn Heisman House ad.
I agree. We need to push them to make that happen.
That would be awesome because they're not even, you know, I just think that would be a perfect one. But as far as the alternate uniforms go, I think that would be a way to at least get a little buzz. But the problem is Auburn people, 70% of Auburn people don't want any change at all. They want blue and white or white and white, and that's it. Maybe 30% are willing to entertain the possibility of like something, a variant once a year on like homecoming when we're playing, you know, nobody state. And the problem is I see that and I don't disagree in a way, but on the other hand, if your big look at us, we're wearing an alternate uniform thing is on a game that nobody outside of Auburn is watching anyway, then what's the point? It needs to be on like the Washington game or something. But see, then people are going to say, "Oh, well, if you change up your look for the big game everybody in the country is watching, like Washington, then you've messed up your branding because now they don't know who they're watching. Who's this orange team?" You know. So I can see it both ways. I really can. I mean, I want to do things differently. I like the idea of maybe once a year wearing an orange jersey or something. I like that. There's no reason not to do it. You keep the other 12 games or whatever blue or white, that's fine. But you see what I mean, though? If you do it on a game that nobody's watching but the SEC alternate channel, then why even do it?
Because it's not about you and it's not about TV. I think I speak for a lot of fans, but I think we have a great uniform and we can tinker around with it, you know, minute detail kind of stuff that only, you know, Clint is going to notice. But I think for everybody else, like, it doesn't change. And it's a really good thing because it's a great uniform. And I think a lot of fans feel that way.
Yeah.
To me, the only reason to do it is if there's some high school juniors and seniors out there who this would on some level help influence their decision to come to Auburn. That's it, to because it's cooler or whatever. Yeah. That is the only reason to do it, because you're building some buzz or some hype with young people you're recruiting. There's no reason to do it in terms of like jersey sales or, you know, how us older alums are going to feel about it. Like or TV or whatever. It's only to generate buzz with recruits.
That's the reason Pat Dye put the names on the back of the jerseys in 92, I think it was. It's the reason that he kept alternating white shoes, black shoes, white shoes every year, because the players wanted this. Now they wanted that. Now they wanted this. They wanted that. So, you know, before you get on your high horse out there, folks, and say, well, Pat Dye never would have gone along with this. He did. He didn't change the jerseys, but he changed the face masks. He changed the shoes every other year. He changed the name on the back or not. He changed a lot of things like that. So it has been done. You know, then Terry Bowden put the orange drop shadow for a while, which I liked. I'm the only person, but I liked it. Chizik, I think, wasn't it Chizik put the metallic orange, or was that Gus? On the helmet?
It was Chizik.
Yeah, I thought so. Chizik even put the giant AU that one game. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. We could rename this podcast the Orange Drop Shadow.
That would be awesome. Oh, that would be awesome. We have to do that. We'll have a special episode of the Orange Drop Shadow. Let's see. Any other listener questions?
Theodore Roosevelt says, I think Anthony Schwartz is going to have a big year. He's very fast. He'll give the offense a deep threat. Other than Slayton, I could see Gus putting them on opposite ends of the field, run deep, which I like. And I think Schwartz actually could have a huge year as a kickoff returner. We were just talking about the kickoff rule, but I think having a guy like we had Alexander Wright years ago for this, I think having a guy that fast when he gets the ball and he can get the speed up like Schwartz can really mess up the angles and the kick coverage for teams. And he has the ability to take it to the house in any play. I can also, you know, I could, depending on how he can handle it, we need a guy to run the end around and kind of maybe do the Corey Grant McCaleb role,
which
with Eli Stove out. Maybe he could do that.
That's
and he
true.
Could be kind of the home run hitter like McCaleb was.
That's true. That is true. Two things. If he doesn't get killed, because you don't want him to be blasting along 800 miles an hour and run right into, you know, the defense coming at him,
sure,
the kick turn coverage. And two, I'm not sure that Gus would trust a true freshman that with that kind of responsibility that soon. Maybe he would. I don't know, but we'll see. Any more?
That's it for listener questions.
All right. We'll take a quick, I'm not sure how much there is, but we'll take a quick trip around.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
There's your Formula One fantasy leader right now with a trip around the SEC theme. So what's going on around the SEC besides Auburn right quick?
Nothing huge. I mean, some players, other schools, you know, normal off-season stuff, injuries, players getting arrested, transfers. I think one thing to watch for, and again, this is one of those ones that it's out there and we just got to hope that things work out the way we want to. I really, really want there to be a quarterback controversy at Alabama.
Well, that would be great.
I don't think it's going to happen at Georgia. I don't think they're going to redshirt the freshman. I think Fromm's going to play. But I think in Alabama, they're in a situation where whoever doesn't play is leaving.
Yeah.
It is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think they could leave, you know, if they make an absolute – see, this is where they're going to try and play it close to the vest because they don't want him to leave.
Right.
Because they know they're in a situation where if one of them leaves before the season starts and the other one gets hurt in game two, they're up a creek.
Oh, man.
They don't have another quarterback that could take him anywhere. So I think – but so my I'm out there 100% going to fan the flames on this the minute one of them is playing and throws an incompletion. and we all need to be in that same boat. That's what we're cheering for is because I'm telling you, like, there is no scenario where they both stay and they're both happy.
No, I agree. Yeah. Well, and it's not like Alabama fans aren't going to be quick to judgment and rush to judgment and start, you know, that's what they do. They live for that stuff. So,
well, they've already made that decision. They made that decision before we played last year that Tua was the guy, even though Hurts is, you know, whatever, 30 and Tua is a starter. So,
right.
I think Tua is probably going to be the starter and Hurts is going to leave.
Yeah, I kind of see it that way, too. Oh, you know, Tua's already won 3 Heisman trophies, man. He might as well be playing for Notre Dame back in the, you know, 80s when Beano Cook was awarding him 3 Heisman trophies.
He played the second half against a team that had prepared for the other quarterback. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. So, any other SEC news? I can't think of any.
Nothing else exciting.
All right, well, let's bring this sucker in for a landing. We had, like we said, we had some technical problems that kind of pushed us back. So we've covered, I think, everything we really wanted to cover for tonight. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks and kind of catch up with what's new. We got to get our interview stuff going. We got to get...
This is what I would say. I'm going to send this to people directly, some people directly to talk to them. But if they're someone you want us to talk to, whether it's an Auburn reporter or an alum or somebody on Twitter, whatever, do you think it would be entertaining for us to have on the podcast? Yeah, let Van and I know.
Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea, yeah. And we have our regulars, and we'll be, you know, hitting them up here in the next couple of 3 weeks. And so, all right. Well, and we hope you enjoy this show and continue to support AU Wishbone. And also, bear in mind, we have On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. Jared's been kind of doing a great job kind of being in charge of that, you know, when I've been trying to run the White Rocket show and keep the Wishbone rolling. And so, you know, we got to do our World Cup of Bond over there. And Alan Porter and I are coming up on doing Diamonds Are Forever next week, the big review of that as we work our way through all 24 movies at once a month. So we got that show going. And in the White Rocket show, I just interviewed Charles Soule from Marvel Comics, and I just interviewed Mike Barron, the creator of Nexus and Badger, and wrote The Punisher and The Flash. So lots of good stuff going on our network. So don't just follow AU Wishbone if you like that other stuff too. Check that out as well. So, John, I think our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com. and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/AUWishbone and follow the show on Twitter at AUWishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so
this has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.